Next case, United States v. Simpson. Appellant ready to argue?
Yes, Your Honor.
Government?
Yes, Your Honor.
Appellant may argue.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court. May it please the court, I am Tammy Mitchell, and together with Lieutenant Clifton Morgan, we represent the appellant, Gunnery Sergeant Gregory Simpson. With this court's permission, I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you. At the heart of this case is an improvident guilty plea. A person cannot have a criminal conviction for an act that is not criminal. Yet that is exactly what happened in this case. Gunnery Sergeant Simpson has a criminal conviction for MB's non-criminal act of sending indecent images to him through the government's creative yet legally deficient charging scheme to transform him from being a mere recipient of indecent images, which is not a crime, into a distributor. At the end of the day, under either Clause 1 or Clause 2 of Article 77, it is legally impossible for him to incur criminal liability for Specification 2 of Charge 2, because either he directly delivers to himself or he facilitates delivery to himself as opposed to another. And therefore, this court should set aside and dismiss Specification 2 of Charge 2 and remand for a hearing to determine if Gunnery Sergeant Simpson wants to withdraw from his guilty plea, considering it is not knowing and voluntary under Goslin, Medina, and Blowen. There are two problems with this particular case.
There's no allegation of IAC here, right?
There was, Your Honor. But that was not a grant. That was not a grant.
Not granted on.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I didn't hear the question.
We didn't grant on that.
Correct.
Okay. So the only thing before us is the 77 issue.
Correct, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
And the legal impossibility. So there were two problems. Well, there were several problems at trial. First, Gunnery Sergeant Simpson was informed at trial that he was pleading guilty as a Clause 1 accomplice, but as the government concedes to this court, which the government did not concede before the NMCCA, he was charged with a Clause 2 as a perpetrator, and the military judge injected several questions along the lines of, but for your actions, she would not have done this. For example, at JA page 85, which raises a Clause 2 causation theory. The military judge conflated these two theories, similar to what happened in Medina and Blauen, with multiple theories of how images are child pornography. And here, the military judge conflated the two theories of liability under Article 77, which they are two separate and distinct theories of how someone incurs liability, and they cannot be blended together. And then on top of that, the military judge also conflated accomplice liability with conspiracy liability under Article 81 of the UCMJ and misled him as to the type of participation required for him to be guilty of distribution as an accomplice. And that is at JA 74, 75, and 80, and 81, where the military judge states, there's a lot that overlaps with what was previously discussed with the conspiracy. And that is an erroneous statement of the law. And under the standard of review for this case in reviewing a guilty plea, when a military judge misleads the accused on the law, that is an issue that this court reviews de novo. And then as to the participation requirements, the military judge simply discussed willful participation, which is not the standard. The fourth element under the Goslin, the four elements of accomplice liability as outlined in Goslin, the fourth element, it requires an active or affirmative participation. That is, the accomplice not only encourages the perpetrator to commit the crime, but then and that's the first element under Goslin, but the fourth element is that the accomplice has to do something, an actus reus, if you will, to advance the criminal act that has been charged.
So are you saying that that is distinct from the language in Article 77 that refers to assists, encourages, advises, counsels, or commands another?
Well, we have that particular language, Your Honor, but built into that, as we saw in Goslin, it's not enough to just encourage someone to do something and then they do it.
Well, wasn't there more than encouragement here? Didn't he himself admit in the course of the guilty plea that he had counseled, which is one of the words that is used here in Article 77? He said, I counseled her to do this. So why isn't that block checked?
Because the words themselves are not enough. And if you take a look at the stipulation of...
Now, when you say the words, are you referring to the words of Article 77, or are you referring to the words uttered, I guess, written by the accused are not enough?
Yes, Your Honor. So under Article 77, the words that are used to advise, to encourage, to assist, those particular words, this court and other federal courts have recognized that the words themselves that are uttered are not enough to create accomplice liability. The accomplice must also do something. Active participation, or as this court called it in Goslin, affirmative participation. So built into aiding and abetting liability, there are two things. One, the mens rea. Does the accomplice want the perpetrator to engage in the act at issue, which the military judge covered during the Providence inquiry, and it's in the stipulation of fact. But when it comes to the actus reus, what did Gunnery Sergeant Simpson actually do to advance the distribution, which is the delivery aspect? What did he do at that point? And the sole question from the military judge, and this is at page 80, did you advise MB how to commit the offense? And he's talking about both the taking of the images and the distribution of those images. And his Gunnery Sergeant Simpson's response at JA 81 says, I didn't come up with an idea on how to take the pictures or to accomplish the mission, generally speaking, sir. So there is no actus reus there. And when you take a look at the stipulation of fact, and I believe this is at page...
Can I ask a question, though?
Yes. I'm sorry.
How is this part of the issue that's before us? How is it an intrinsic part of the issue granted? Where did you raise this in your initial brief as compared to your reply brief? Where is this a natural response to anything the government raised here? And so why haven't you forfeited this argument before this court?
Your Honor, we did raise the willful participation issue in our reply brief. And at the heart of this...
And that's my point, though. You did so in your reply brief.
Because when we're looking at the legal sufficiency, when the granted issue focuses on the legal sufficiency, it is legally impossible for him to distribute to himself. Because...
Okay, but it seems like you're... I almost used the word transmuting, but in light of Hill, we don't want to use that. It seems as if you're changing the playing field here in terms of the issue that we granted, which is really a legal issue. And now in your reply brief, you're transforming this into a factual issue about the sufficiency of the plea. And I understand your point, and you've made it well, but my only point now, when you're halfway through your argument, is that an issue that's really before us, or have you forfeited that argument? And should you instead be focusing on what you raised in your initial brief, the legal issue based on what we granted?
Yes, Your Honor, and I guess what I'm trying to get to at the end of this, the end of the discussion is going back to one of our points in our initial brief, and the willful participation part as it relates to receiving the images. And we have Goslin, and then we also have this court in Hill, 25 MJ at 414. We also have Campa and Baker, and those are Federal Circuit cases. The recipient of the images cannot be tagged with the distribution as an aider and abettor.
Now, you use the word images, but those cases were based on drugs, weren't they?
Correct, Your Honor.
But for instance, in Hill, this court was referring to the statutory scheme that was provided by Congress in the distribution and receipt of illegal drugs. Why should we extend this to the receipt distribution of indecent images?
Your Honor, because they're both contraband. The indecent images are contraband. And when you have, we also have in Hill, and all of these other cases also involve drugs, you have a third and sometimes even fourth parties involved. Whereas in this particular case, there are only two people involved, and that's the number required for the distribution to occur. So it is, I think it's very sound for this court to say Article 77 cannot be used under either theory to tag either the accomplice, to tag the service member.
But where is there a comparable statutory scheme in regard to indecent images when we're looking at what Hill and the other cases you cited from the federal circuits were referring to the statutory scheme in the context of drug distribution?
Correct, Your
Honor. Where are there parallels for indecent images and illegal drugs in terms of a statutory scheme?
There is no crime of receiving indecent images.
But that was not the point of this court in referring to the statutory scheme. You were saying the Congress has decided that someone who is responsible for receiving receives a lesser punishment than someone who is responsible for distributing. Where's the parallel with indecent images in terms of statutory scheme?
Well, the parallel is Congress has determined that receiving deserves no punishment, or possessing the images deserves no punishment. If Congress wants to come out with a new law that criminalizes the receipt and the possession of indecent images, just like it did with drugs, then Congress is free to do that. But it's not for the government to get involved in a creative charging decision to do an end run around congressional intent not to punish that particular act. And at the end of the day, and this is also under Harold, just the receipt of the images, and when you look at the providence of the guilty plea, and then you take a look at the stipulation of fact, well, how did you counsel her to do this? Well, I encouraged her.
Can I ask a question, though?
Yes.
In terms of perpetrator principle aiding and abetting, there are lots and lots of those types of cases charged across the country. One would think that if there were this concept as articulated in Hill extended to other instances of aiding and abetting, that there would be case law. And yet the case law you can cite to is specifically grounded on the distribution of illegal drugs. What should we make of the fact that there isn't other case law for other offenses involving aiding and abetting that is consistent with your position? Essentially, your argument is we should look at the principal as standing in the shoes of the perpetrator, and therefore there was no distribution because standing in those shoes, there was no distribution. Why do we not find that in other aiding and abetting cases the last 50 years?
Well, I'm not quite sure I know the answer to that. I can only speculate, Your Honor. It could be because in all of the other aiding and abetting cases that we've been able to find, you have more people involved than the minimum number for the distribution. So in Hill, they aligned Hill with the civilian drug dealer, and there was a middle person and then the undercover agent. And it's the same thing with Harold and Chiampa and Baker. They facilitated the distribution literally to another person, a third person, not to themselves when there were only two people involved, the person to deliver and then the other person to receive.
Counsel, it seems like there's two ways to look at Hill. Either it's applying some sort of general principle of common law towards these kinds of offenses, or you can look at it as it's based on the specific statutory scheme that existed there and made an exception. Is there a background principle that you want us to apply that could apply broadly to aiding and abetting charges that you think applies in this case? Or are we just stuck with the specific statutory scheme that we had in Hill?
No, Your Honor. I think what this court can do is come out with a solid decision saying in a distribution case, any distribution of contraband, Article 77 cannot be used to extend criminal liability to the service member as the recipient of that contraband when the only two people involved are the distributor and the recipient. And that is what the government did in this case. And then, again, blending the two theories together. I mean, someone, as a perpetrator, they have either committed the crime by their own hand or they have done something to directly cause another person, in this case, MB. MB is the perpetrator, and under that Clause 2 theory, then Gunnery Sergeant Simpson steps into her shoes and becomes MB. And then we have the delivering to himself, which is not a crime. Under the first clause, the accomplice liability, he is facilitating the act, which is not criminal for her, but setting that aside, what is he facilitating? He is facilitating her sending the images to him, not to another person. And receiving is a passive, not an active act, and that completes the delivery process. It does not advance the delivery process. So in order for him to do an act at that point to advance the delivery of images, he has to send those images to someone else, and that did not occur in this particular case.
May I ask one question?
Chief, go ahead.
One of your arguments in your opening brief is that he can't be found guilty of aiding and abetting because what she did was not a crime, since she's not subject to the UCMJ and there was apparently no federal or state law that she violated. And it seemed to me that the government said in their response that argument is not before us. You didn't really, I don't know if you didn't have time, but we didn't really hear much about that just now. Are you abandoning that argument, and do you think that argument is before us?
If I may answer your question, Your Honor?
Yes, go ahead.
We are not abandoning that particular argument. It certainly seems unfair with the point of accomplice liability is to put the accomplice in the same position legally as the perpetrator, and it seems unfair to tell a service member that even though the perpetrator did not commit a crime, we're still going to hold you criminally liable. We are just recognizing that, you know, there is another argument that supports our position with respect to the granted issue and wanted to discuss that alternate argument more in depth.
Is that argument properly before us, though?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor, because it all relates to the legal impossibility of a recipient aiding and abetting or, you know, becoming the perpetrator of the crime of distribution, which is defined as the delivery of the images to the possession of another person. And in this case, we do not have another person.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for the government.
Chief Judge Stuckey, judges of the court, and may it please the court. I'm Lieutenant Greg Rustico, and along with Lieutenant Colonel Nicholas Gannon, I represent the United States. This court should affirm the lower court because legal impossibility is not a bar to principal liability, nor is principal liability contingent upon the perpetrator's amenability to prosecution. Appellant's proposed transmutation rule is incorrect for three reasons. First, it is inconsistent with the plain text of Article 77. Second, it contradicts existing case law, both from the Supreme Court and other federal courts. And third, it is inconsistent with the President's guidance found in the MCM. Turning first to the text of Article 77, Clause 1 states that any person subject to this chapter who aids, abets, counsels, commands, or procures the commission of an offense is a principal. And that is precisely what happened in this case. Appellant admitted, both in his stipulation of facts and at trial, that he aided, abetted, and counseled MB to send intimate images of her daughter, ENF, to him.
Counsel, is it your position that Hill was wrongly decided?
No. To discuss Hill briefly, Your Honor, the government believes that Hill is correctly decided within the context of controlled substances. As the court noted in the Hill opinion.
But you just said the text of 77 sort of dictates that it seems to me that the facts in Hill, under the text of 77, we would have to find that someone who goes out and buys drugs is aiding and abetting the sale of drugs. Just by the text.
Yes, Your Honor, and I believe, if I understand Hill correctly, the court was saying, was not creating a bright line rule that was never possible. What they were saying was that a mere recipient hasn't aided and abetted enough. They haven't, their involvement hasn't risen to the level of aiding and abetting. It was noting the ability of a clever prosecutor to kind of finagle Article 77 in a way that it's not intended to be used.
Okay, so you would agree then there is sort of a factual determination that has to be made. Did the defendant involve themselves enough in the acts?
Exactly, Your Honor.
Make themselves an aider and a better.
Yeah, so in Hill, for instance, the court used the phrase sufficiently associate. And so in that case, actually, the conviction was affirmed because the appellant had, in fact, sufficiently associated himself with the distributor in that case. And that's exactly what we have here. We have an appellant who's admitted that he was more than just a mere recipient. This isn't an arm's-length drugs transaction with a stranger, say. No, he emailed her, and the emails are in the record, and he repeatedly requested, badgered MB to send him these photos.
I'm curious about that. I know what he said when he pled guilty, but looking at the record, what did he do beyond asking her to send them to him that involved him in the distribution?
Well, he requested multiple times, first of all, and then secondly, he discussed different ways in which he could take pictures of her and then send them to her. So there's discussion of, I believe, underwear pics as well as pictures in the bathtub. And so he's counseling her, and that's the key language that we get from Clause 177. So one position the government definitely disagrees with the appellant on is whether words alone can be enough to aid and abet. And frankly, we look to the text itself. And Article 77, Clause 1, states that you can be a principal if you counsel, command, or procure. Those all sound like instances in which words alone, you can do those things. Commanding someone, counseling someone, those are all done over words. And so here, his words were, in the context of an email, but the extent to which he didn't just say one time, could you send me a photo? It's over the course of a number of emails over multiple days that he's asking her for emails and then asking her for images, excuse me, and then also talking to her about which types of images she should take.
Okay, so you start off by saying legal impossibility doesn't matter.
It's not a bar to principal liability, Your Honor.
It's not a bar to principal liability.
Yes, so...
Well, what's he doing here? I mean, if you seem to be saying, maybe I'm wrong, but you seem to be saying that it's sort of the amount of back and forth he had with her, and he had lots of it, so therefore he's liable as a principal, even though the government admits it's legally impossible. What is the government saying here?
Your Honor, our position is that under the text of 77, Clause 1,
yeah,
one becomes a principal through the act of aiding, abetting, counseling, or procuring, and that's what the appellant did in this case. What Article 77, Clause 1 doesn't tell us to do...
I mean, certainly he becomes a principal with respect to taking the pictures or something like that.
Yes, and then...
A principal in respect to... distribute it?
Because he's requesting that she send him the images. And
well,
so,
then she's a principal. She's distributing, you know, because she's out of it. She's not subject to the code.
Right, Your Honor.
But so she gives him the pictures. He now has the pictures. He doesn't give them to anybody else. He just sits in his bedroom and pores over. Well, and there's no statute that criminalizes that. So, what has he done other than prodded her to do it as a principal? Because he can't be convicted of something that's a legal impossibility. I don't know what the government's saying here.
Yes, Your Honor. The key is he's not aiding and abetting her as a principal. She's the perpetrator. So he is aiding and abetting her.
She's a principal.
She's a perpetrator as well, Your Honor.
Right.
Yes. And so he as the principal has aided and abetted her in committing acts that satisfy all the elements of Article 120, Charlie. She distributed because she sent to another that another just happens
well,
to
okay,
be him.
Okay, so yeah, admittedly, she distributed it.
Right.
She where does that leave him?
He's the principal.
We're not concerned with her. Where does that leave him? Other than poring over his photos.
Well, respectfully, Honor, in this circumstance, we are concerned with her because his crime is aiding and abetting what she did. So what she did is actually...
She distributed it, she, among other things, distributed it to him.
Exactly, yes.
Okay. He received it.
Yes, his receipt...
He now has it.
Yes.
But as I understand it, simple receipt isn't a crime.
Correct. His crime did not occur when he received the images or when he opened the email. His crime occurred earlier when he counseled, commanded, procured, he didn't command necessarily, but procured, encouraged her. I think the word that was used at trial was also instigated her to do those acts. So his
you
criminal
mean
action,
take the pictures?
He did not take the pictures himself.
No. What did he counsel her to do?
He counseled her to both take the pictures and to send them to her. Send them to him, excuse me.
And to give them to him.
Yes. In fact, he spends, I don't have an exact number, but from what I recall, the majority of the emails are actually more about, can you send me more pics? Do you have any pics yet to send? Because, again, this is occurring over a period of time.
I can certainly see him being held liable as an aider or abettor or an accessory or something or a co-conspirator as to taking the photos. And had she distributed it to a third party at his behest, yeah, but that didn't happen. So we've got a bunch of contraband photos, and he now has them. She's distributed them to him, but he hasn't done anything other than say, give me more pics, but that doesn't go to distribution. That goes to taking the pictures.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I believe it does go to distribution because, again, we need to analyze this case from looking at what he aided and abetted. And what he aided and abetted was MB's actions. And so Article 120 Charlie tells us that distribution is sending to the actual or constructive possession of another.
So you agree that distribution has to be between two people?
Yes.
At a minimum?
Yes. And so in this circumstance, she did distribute the images. She sent them to another. The fact that another happens to also be the person who aided and abetted her makes no difference. That's the point I was trying to make at the open.
Don't we just have overcharging here?
Well, Your Honor,
let's throw everything into the bucket and see what sticks.
So in this circumstance, he pled guilty to both the conspiracy and the aiding and abetting, and all of those offenses were merged for sentencing. So that's an issue of potential.
Well, we're not getting into sentencing here, as I understand.
Right, but
that's not an issue here. We didn't grant on sentencing.
Correct.
So that's fine, but I'm troubled by the government's theory. But go ahead.
Lieutenant Rustico, just so I'm clear on the government's position, is the government's position that a specific act effecting delivery as an aider or abettor in this instance is not required or irrelevant, or are you saying alternatively the words he used are enough to comprise the act necessary to effect delivery? Do you see what I'm asking, what the distinction is?
I think I understand, Your Honor. I mean, our position is that some action is necessary, but that there's no textual reason to believe that those actions could not themselves be words. Because, again, going back to Clause 1 of Article 77, aiding and abetting includes also counseling, commanding, procuring. And
so you're not, you know, taking the position that, hey, look, we don't need an act on the part of the aider or abettor in this instance. You're not taking that position.
No, just simply that the act could itself be words or, in this case, an email.
Thank you.
Yes.
But, counsel, is it the government's position that every offense that requires a minimum of two people, such as a distribution effect, no matter what it is, that if the person receiving the contraband, if they have asked for it, they have procured it under Article 77, then they are liable as the principal as well?
No, Your Honor, not in every circumstance.
Okay.
So,
what is the difference? How do we draw the line?
So, again, we look potentially to the Hill case for a helpful analogy. And there the court looked at whether the individual sufficiently associated themselves with the distributor. And so what Hill tells us is that, at least in the context of controlled substances, just merely requesting is not enough. But we don't believe that there's any issue with the fact that there's only two parties involved here, for instance. We don't have a Wharton's rule problem here, as the lower court noted, because distribution doesn't require two guilty parties. The person who's receiving could very well not know that the image is contraband or that the drugs are contraband. And so here we simply just have an offense that requires a second person, the same way that assault requires a second person. The person on the other end doesn't have to be a criminal. In this circumstance, though, the person that's received the images has done more than merely receive them. He's requested. The reason the images are coming to him is because he has encouraged, instigated, badgered MB to take the photos and send them to him. That's what he admitted in his stipulation. It's what he admitted at trial, is that he was more than, as the appellant notes in their reply brief, just a mere recipient. He was the instigator of the act. He just simply didn't do it himself. And what Congress tells us in Article 77 is that criminal liability does not lie just with the individual who commits the act, but those who facilitate criminal acts. And that is what appellant did in this case.
Okay, so here we think that if he had just said to MB, hey, if you haven't have any pics, I'd appreciate it if you could send them to me, then there'd be no liability.
Not a problem.
But here it's the government's position that he went on. He badgered. And if we go to the record and we apply the standard from Hill, your argument is that we'll find that he involved himself in the distribution enough to become the principal and make himself liable, when, as if he had just asked, he wouldn't have been.
Yes, Your Honor, we agree that if he had merely just asked, that would not be enough. But that's ultimately a factual issue. That's not before this court. The question before this court is the one of whether legal impossibility is a bar to principal liability. But the facts are here in the record, and the court's welcome to look to them. The appellant admitted, and I would direct the court's attention to the stipulation of fact as well as the providence inquiry, he made clear that his involvement was more than just a single question. It was thorough. So turning to the question of whether it matters that MB was a civilian not subject to the code, I'd again direct the court's attention to the text of Article 77. It states that a principal is someone who aids, abets, counsels, commands, procures the commission of an offense under the UC, or punishable by this chapter. It doesn't state that it's only an individual who aids and abets an offender. It's the offense itself. And notably, the president in the MCM, in his guidance that accompanies Article 77, noted that a principal's liability can lie even if the perpetrator is never identified, prosecuted, or is acquitted.
And so, why do those three things necessarily mean that include someone who's not subject to the code?
Which the three things?
The three things you just noted that the president stated. I don't think any of one of those things doesn't tell me that it includes necessarily people not subject to the code.
No, Your Honor. Sorry, it's the logical. The next logical step after recognizing that the individual doesn't have to be found is that if you can be convicted without the individual ever having been found, yet at the same time the government has to prove that what the individual did was prosecutable, those two things are in cognitive dissonance or in conflict with one another. And so I concede that statement from the president does not directly address this issue. And frankly, I think that's why we're here, is because this exact issue has not been addressed before.
Now,
Now
the same language exists in Article 78. And in Article 78, the president makes it quite clear that the subject does not have to be subject to the code. That clarification doesn't exist in Article 77. So how is someone supposed to be on notice that Article 77 is supposed to be, I assume your answer is going to be, we should interpret 77 the same way as 78. But how is someone supposed to be on notice then?
So I think this court's case law, from the cases such as Jones and Tracy, are instructive. So in those cases, it is true that the civilian who was being perpetrated, or the civilians the civilian perpetrators who were being aided and abetted were committing civilian crimes as well. But this court, in considering those cases, did not analyze them by looking at whether or not the perpetrator had committed a civilian offense. They looked at whether the civilians had violated the attempt statute as well as Article 112 alpha. So that's another indication to this court that the question is not whether the individual is subject to prosecution, it's whether the offense was committed, where each of the elements met. And here, there's really no factual question that MB met the elements of Article 120 Charlie. And there's nothing in the text of Article 77 that would appear to limit principal liability in that way. And the president's failure to directly address the issue in the MCM does not preclude the individual being on notice for the fact that they are not allowed to aid and abet another person in committing an offense subject to under this chapter.
But why wouldn't we interpret the difference in the explanations in the MCM to mean that there's a difference in the way those two articles are supposed to be interpreted or applied?
I think, Your Honor, that would be a reasonable a reasonable way to approach statutory interpretation from Congress, absence in one place and presence in another. But the president doesn't make positive law in the MCM. It's directive, it's guidance. And so often it's, from my understanding, it's in response to factual scenarios that come up that add that level of guidance. So it may be in the president's interest to add that to the MCM going forward, but its absence is not enough to undermine what Congress has said in the text of Article 77.
Counsel, may I ask you on this second part of your argument here, is this issue properly before the court about whether it matters that she's not subject to the UCMJ and it's not a crime under state or federal law? Is that within the scope of the question granted?
No, Your Honor, and that's what we noted in a footnote in our brief, is that question is really outside the scope of the granted issue. The granted issue here is whether it is, because it was legally impossible for appellant to distribute to himself, which we agree, whether that is a bar to his liability as a principal. And our answer to that question is no. It is not an issue because there's nothing in the text of Article 77 that supports this transmutation rule whereby an individual, we place them in the shoes of the perpetrator and ask whether or not what they did was a crime. And I'd be remiss if I didn't note, for instance, the Coffin case from the Supreme Court, as well as Nofsinger and Standifer. If we use that transmutation rule that appellant suggests, then the Supreme Court got it wrong in Coffin. Because if we took that appellant and put him in the shoes of the perpetrator, he would have committed no crime. Same is true for both Nofsinger and Standifer. In those cases, the civilian could never have violated a government ethics statute. And so if we had put him in the shoes, if we had adopted the rule that appellant suggests, the court would have gotten it wrong then in those cases. And so ultimately, as I'm running out of time, I urge the court to focus on the text of Article 77 and stay true to what Congress has told us, which is that criminal liability does not lie merely with those who perpetrate crimes, but with those who aid, abet, counsel, command, and procure crimes. And that is what appellant did here. Pending any further questions.
Thank you, counsel. Appellant have rebuttal.
Your Honor, the government made a concession in its supplemental citation. And again, this is not a concession that it made to the Navy Marine Corps below, but they made the concession here. They charged Gunnery Sergeant Simpson as the perpetrator in reliance on the discussion of RCM 302 that says to charge all principals as perpetrators. So regardless of whether it is a Clause 1 accomplice liability or a Clause 2 causation theory, he is charged as a perpetrator. And as the government further conceded, as the perpetrator, it is legally impossible for Gunnery Sergeant Simpson to have a conviction because it results in distributing to himself. Even under a Clause 1 theory, given the government's concession that Gunnery Sergeant Simpson sufficiently associates himself with MB for purposes of the distribution, the end result is the same. He is facilitating that delivery to himself. And it is legally impossible for one person to simultaneously be a distributor and the recipient. One can only be a recipient after that delivery occurs. With respect to Goslin, the third element requires that someone actually commits an offense. Article 77 is not in and of itself a criminal offense. MB did not commit a criminal offense. I see that I'm out of time, Your Honor, if there are no further questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Well, thanks, counsel, for both sides. Case is now submitted. And court is in recess until 09:30 tomorrow.